Welcome to the Chasing Thoughts podcast. Listen in as Mindy, Keith, and their guests take a deep dive into their own minds and souls to investigate the beauty of imperfection, challenge their beliefs, and embrace the richness of living a truly authentic life. Welcome to Chasing Thoughts.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Chasing Thoughts. Keith and I here today. And today we're going to talk about conflict, which is super juicy. And I'm excited about this because I think that Keith and I have very different experiences with this. So Keith has struggled with anger, and he knows anger real well. And I'm the opposite. I'm totally afraid of anger. When I get into conflict, I have a tendency to roll over. I'm afraid to like hold my ground in like a back and forth, like powerful discussion. And that has not served me well at all in my life, right? And so there's this middle ground of conflict that's healthy. I'd like to discuss what that is. And for me, this is coming up because, you know, recently I've been having this, you know, weird thing that's been happening to my Instagram account where like I just keep getting more action, I guess. You know, and so that means like more people commenting, more of this and that. And because it's new, I'm like, oh, I want to try to respond to all of this and like keep it going, which is like not sustainable at all. But it's been really interesting to me because there's been like this side little growth journey happening with me. So at first I would post something and then of course it's the internet, it attacked, negativity is going to happen, right? And I felt like, oh, I need to back away. I'm the wrong one here. I should delete this post. I don't want negativity on my feed. It felt very like I was disappearing, right? Or avoiding it, right? So it was, I sat with it because I'm like, wait a second, like this isn't how I want to operate. I had a situation back when I was coaching like 2010, 2015, like in that, where I made this YouTube video and it actually got like a million hits, right? Like,
wow.
But then there was so many negative comments on it that I just deleted it.
Wow.
And now I look back and I go, that didn't serve me. Right. But I was so like shooken up and embarrassed about some of the comments that people had made about me. And so as this sort of has gone on this last week or two, well, pause the story for a minute. My husband is the opposite. He like loves it when people try to like scam bait him on the phone. Cause he'll try to like beat him back and like, like he, there's some sort of enjoyment he gets over being like confrontational. And I never understood that. I'm like, when someone tries to scam bait me, I feel bad for me. I feel bad for them. I just feel icky. Right. So I started playing around a little bit more with like not disappearing, not being mean, right? But just not rolling over. And it's been an interesting kind of safe way in my comments thread, right? For me to like play around with what's happening in here around conflict and how I feel about conflict. And I don't know, I don't have the answers, right? I just thought that it would be interesting, just be interesting to explore a little bit more, not just online, but in life. Like, how far do you stand up for yourself? And when do you back up and roll over? And what does standing up for yourself look like? And what if the other person keeps going at you even when you're kind? And right, like all of those types of things. I just think it'd be nice to have a little more clarity on it.
Yeah. That is such a crazy story too, just about that, this video. Cause I mean, especially in the social media world, a video that gets a million views, like, I mean, that's what everybody wants. Like I have one that has like 17,000 and I'm like, I am famous. Everybody, like I'm stopping for autographs on the street, you know? And then to take it down for the, because of the negative comments, that's so wild. And I know like celebrities deal with this as well, you know, where sometimes the comments can trigger, I think, their own judgments and maybe their own insecurities. And then they struggle with that.
Yeah,
the internet is a, it can be such an amazing place and such a nasty place.
Yeah, and I also see that, you know, I've talked a little bit about when I was an executive director and I had to deal a lot with like city hall and city managers and the mayor and all that. And like the conflict associated with that role was one that I wasn't able to navigate. Right. I either pushed too hard and people hated me and then I got a reputation as being a bitch, or I didn't push enough and then I was a pushover, right? Like getting it right and advocating for what was important to advocate for and letting go what wasn't, right? That was difficult for me.
Yeah.
And so this is something that I want to become more comfortable with in my life, in my social media. And I certainly don't want to roll over. Like, that's not the right thing. And
yeah,
the extreme that you knew before where you're pushing to make the other person roll over, that's not what you want either, right?
Yeah. So I used to be the way where no matter how far you go, I will always go one step farther.
Right.
And like, especially when I came home from the military, and I think that's part of like the military culture is accepting like a level of violence as normal.
And probably you know, like, don't give up, don't give in, right? Stay.
Yeah. And we're always fighting each other. Even if there's like an actual issue, you know, and this was before my day in the military, but you would go into, you know, behind the barracks or something and just beat each other up. And whoever went down, that was the loser, you know? And then at that point, everything is done. I remember, in fact, when I first got to my unit and we were at the club, because this is before Sandy got there, and I was out with the guys and stuff. Somebody got into a fight, and all you just heard is someone yell "Bravo" on your feet. And so we were part of Bravo Company, and I'm looking around and everybody just jumps up. So because one of the guys from our company, not even in our platoon, just our company, got into a fight. And then it became a company versus company battle. So I brought it that way to the point where I would say like the thing that scared me the most, that really started to scare me with my anger, was when we had gotten home from Italy, and in Italy, you're not supposed to turn right on red. So I was driving with my family and I was at a red light turning right, and I'm sitting there. So the guy behind me beeps, and I go, but he was like, well, I was young then too, but trying to show off his girlfriend in the passenger seat and stuff. And so right after we get on the highway, and he decided he wasn't done with me for this mistake of not turning right on red. And so he pulled up alongside of me on the highway. I was in the middle lane. He pulls up on the right lane and he's given me the finger, but like Sandy's sitting right there. So I went black. Mm-hmm. And I just started slowly turning the wheel to the car and just slowly drifting across. And we were in this little tunnel, and my intention was to put him into the wall of the tunnel at 70 miles an hour. And it was just a slow thing too. I didn't just jam into him, just a slow thing where I started taking his plate and he started moving over. When he got onto the shoulder, all I remember is his girlfriend was hitting him. Sandy was hitting me. But I don't remember like anything. And then I finally just stopped, kind of snapped out of it. And I realized like, I will take it to that point, you know, where I'll hurt somebody. And that scared me so bad.
Yeah.
One of the problems, ironically, that I've had though over the last 20 years dealing with PTSD and stuff and dealing with the constant negative put downs of myself that I create. I have gone, when I started this, I went to the opposite extreme, you know, I feel like I started to where you could do, I mean, you can come up and punch me in my face and I'd be like, God bless you, brother.
Right.
You know, I'm happy I can make your day by allowing you to beat me, you know, like type thing. And like you said, I feel like I was losing part of myself.
Yeah.
You know, like I want to find that balance where I can still be kind, but also still be confident and assertive, you know, like, and that's kind of the word that I've kind of adopted, where I want to learn assertiveness, where I don't just roll over, but I do stand up for myself. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because like you said, like I felt like I lost part of who I was in that overcorrection.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that we have opposite reptilian brains, right? You go to fight, or you used to, and I go to freeze, right? But in both cases, we're totally losing consciousness, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That response. And I think this is an important discussion at this time in the world too, because especially on social media, it's like when you hear things about that I find like really dangerous and offensive, like gay people aren't humans, or right, like some kind of crazy judgment. And do I have a job and responsibility to stand up for that? First question. If I do stand up for that and the person is clearly demonstrating behaviors that they're not interested in a conversation, they just want to be right and mean, then do you just exit the conversation? Right? Like, you know, whatever you believe in this world, at what point do you stand up for it? And what point do you draw back from it? And I think that is a challenge as well. And so it's like yourself, your family, but then it's also, I have the question about world issues, or if you have a family member that believes something, or is, you know, this came up a lot with the last Trump campaign where people are like, oh my God, my uncle's voting for Trump and I think it's bad or whatever. And they let it divide them. And when you're close to somebody like that, you might be able to have like a real conversation, but we have all this division happening. And so there's one part of my brain that's like, I don't want to be part of that division at all. I'm not going to enter those arguments. But then I'm like, well, isn't that apathy? Like, isn't that why Hitler was able to take over? Because people are like, I'm not going to enter that argument, whether or not Jews are people. Yeah. How like privileged am I to have that sort of apathy that I'm not, right? I'm not a colored person. I'm not a gay person. And I don't know. I just, I struggle with this concept.
Yeah. Yeah. It is such a nuanced issue. Because of just where we are in the world with technology and everything, like I've heard people talk about how they don't believe that we were meant to get as much information about like world affairs as we get today, right? You know, because you have our own political thing, like with Trump has been such a divisive figure, which I also think is the cause of the political climate prior to that, you know, to create a space for somebody like that. Then you have Israel and Palestine, you have Russia and Ukraine, you have the warlords in Africa, the gangs in South America, which help drive a lot of the immigration issue. And then right back to us, you have that whole immigration issue, you know, where everything is an us versus them.
Yeah.
And I personally tend to stay out of a lot of that, because I think as far as like the big issues, for instance, Israel versus Palestine, I know a little bit, but I don't know much.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things that all right, let me back up a little bit. So I heard this story. This was a professor of mine named Perry, who was the coolest guy I have ever met in my life. He was an archaeologist. He dug in South Africa. He's an African American guy. He had, you know, dreads. He was like 70. He had like dreads down to like his lower back, wearing like the coolest clothes. I'm like, I love this dude. And he was like, I want to debate. If you don't agree with me, stand up and let me know and we'll debate. And he changed my mind on a lot of stuff. But he told this story about this thing in history called Bacon's Rebellion. And it was, I think, the late, maybe the mid 1800s. I can't remember at this point. But anyways, so prior to this, like there was nothing called white. There weren't white people. and you had the slaves, and then you had indentured servants. The like, you know, like the Irish, stuff like that, and. They, at that point, they pushed, you know, yeah, get married, interracial marriage. Yeah, not a big deal. Well, yeah, go ahead, be happy, you know, all this stuff. And what happened was the indentured servants and the slaves, they banded together, rose up under this guy named Bacon, and they revolted, and they took over a bunch of plantations and stuff. And it was finally put down. But one of the things they did at the end of it is they gave a little bit more rights to the white indentured servants. And then what that did was that caused the white indentured servants to start fighting against the black slaves. So they used conflict to divide and to separate. And to me,
rise above.
Yeah. Yeah. Because now when they're fighting each other, now the plantation owners are sitting back with their sweet tea and their cigars, you know, just enjoying life. And it seems like in the media, which I think is just another arm of like our political system, that's what it does. It drives, it inserts conflict into us, and it creates an us versus them. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as you have that, you have an enemy.
Right.
And then what they do is they start to dehumanize the other. You know, if like, I mean, cause, and it's both sides, you know, people that voted for Trump, they're stupid. What was it with Hillary Clinton? Degenerates, you know, right. Blackwood, redneck, moonshiners, you know, white supremacists. And, you know, maybe there are some in there, especially the white supremacists. But then on the other side, you know, you have, you know, the liquid and the liberal, oh, they just want to, they're socialists, they're communists. They want to take my money and give it to everybody else. And they start to dehumanize. And that's something that's been used in war. I mean, from beginning of time, I mean, every war that we've had from the Revolutionary War, we've had derogatory slang that was used for the enemy. And you have to, in my opinion, you have to dehumanize the enemy in order to be able to pull that trigger or do what you got to do. And not have it like destroy your soul.
Yeah.
And that's where we find ourselves, like in this place of complete, just divided conflict constantly, because like you said, we're allowing other people to be our consciousness, the media, and the media is telling us how to react from that reptilian side of our brain by using fear to drive up that anger.
Yeah.
So I tend to stay out of a lot of that stuff because I don't know the history. I don't know the truth of the matter.
Yeah.
You know, I can easily say like, all right, 30,000 people dead. That's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, it's so nuanced.
I feel like for the most part, I have opted to be on the sidelines as well, mainly because I feel like I have two choices: be in the fight, be divided, or be on the sideline. And it doesn't seem like there's a third option of actually discussing things and coming to common ground and right, that kind of thing. But then it also feels sometimes sort of out of touch and arrogant to be building a social platform, right? Or I don't know what you want to call it, like expertise or influencer or you know, being out in the world publicly and totally ignoring what's happening and posting a meme that's funny, right? Like there's something sort of, you know, there's children being killed over here and you're like, ha ha, this is what I did today, right? There's some sort of something gross about that too, like not acknowledging what's happening in the world at all. And I just wish that, I wish there was another way, or I want somebody to show me a third option of how to navigate the world and stand up for what I want without being drawn into these arguments or othering, you know?
Yeah. What I've been trying to do with where I feel like this is where I want to be is people can come at me, you know? So if I have an opinion about something, you know, I could say this stuff, you know, and then people can come at me and we have this idea of like, I'm going to treat you how you treat me.
Yeah.
You know, and that to me is just going to lead to conflict.
Oh yeah.
So I've made this decision where I'm going to treat you the way I am, because nobody, well, I'm getting to the point where I want to be able to say nobody can control my feelings, because mm-hmm. my anger is beautiful and it's sacred and it's mine. My emotions are sacred. You know, in church, I learned for the longest time, emotions are evil. You're not supposed to have them, all this stuff, but my emotions are sacred to me. I mean, they're what make me, me. And nobody is going to be able to control how I react. Mm-hmm. So even when, and for me, like my platform, like I'm going to put out my message mm-hmm. and the message that I feel aligned with, that I feel is my purpose. And, you know, for instance, that's not, see, I'm even like getting nervous of saying, I want to say this, but I'm getting nervous saying this because I'm like, what are the comments going to be?
Right.
My message is not free Palestine or I stand with Israel. Like my message is love.
Yeah.
So I'm going to push that. And then when somebody comes at me with, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this, like, to, like one of the things that I've learned is like all of that is a reflection of who they are inside. And what they're trying to do is put that on me. Like if I don't have the same stance that they have, again, it's going to create a me versus them. And now they see me as an other and they got to go at me.
Right.
But I'm trying to still look at them as they're just people. They got their message. They got their passion, whatever, but they're just, they don't realize, I don't even know, how do you say this? They don't realize that it is just a reflection of their inside. I'm not the one making them mad.
Right.
They're just mad.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not going to stoke that fire in them because I lived in that for so long.
Yeah, and it feels icky.
Oh my, it's a miserable existence.
Yeah.
I mean, like you literally get to this point where you're trying to control the entire world. And when it doesn't go the way that you want it to go, you lose your shit.
Yeah.
You know, and which means I would lose my shit 18 times a day. Yeah. I mean, the other day, like I'm like prepping coffee for the morning and I wasn't thinking, you know, my mind was other places and the little scoop just barely hit the edge of the coffee maker and all the coffee grounds all over the floor. And I'm like, all right. So I'm like, all right, yeah, you ass, like now go clean all this up, you know, cause you're an idiot and stuff like that. But I'm laughing about it, you know, whereas before I would have spent 20 minutes walking around the house, screaming my head off, you know, because of coffee grounds.
Yeah.
You know, so understanding that people's anger, even about like these issues, it's a reflection of them inside. Yeah. And when I see that come out, I've now gotten to the point where I can feel bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember what that's like, you know, and I remember how debilitating living in that constant state of readiness for conflict, how exhausting that can be.
Yeah, your nervous system's just jacked up all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, tension headaches. You see all these people that have all these things. Like, one of the things I just learned about was like cortisol, how you can tell somebody that has a lot of cortisol in their system, because they'll have like a big body, but their arms and legs will be like little toothpicks.
Yeah. Like,
I know that. You know, for the longest time, I could not lose weight. I mean, I would be eating carrots and drinking these disgusting juices that Sandy makes for me, you know, like, and not having anything that is good, you know, no cookies, no ice cream, like none of the like major food groups that I grew up on. And I couldn't lose weight. And when I started to meditate and lower my stress level, you know, when I started learning about what cortisol does in our system, all of a sudden, like, I dropped like 50 pounds.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Like,
the
emotional connection to weight. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, just in that, taking on other people's need of conflict or their anger, their misery, whatever it is that they're dealing with, taking that on into ourselves is going to have a biological reaction, not only emotional and mental, but a biological reaction in our system.
Yeah.
You know, and we talk about health and stuff like that and not putting in processed foods and stuff. Well, the other thing I don't want to put in is somebody else's processed thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I've noticed that for me, another red flag is if I start to feel like I have to prove myself or defend myself, it's like, that's a red flag that like something's not clear here, right? Like I've entered into the game of this, of conflict.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's challenging to do when it's an issue that you care about or, you know, I guess the way I've been handling things as they come up is I'll take one step in and then if it's clear that that's not a discussion, I just thank the person for their opinion and step back out. I mean, it's a little bit different in real person, you know, like close relationships, but on the internet, I think that's all you can do, right? Because having an internet conversation with a stranger that simply does not want to entertain any other ideas is just a waste of your time, right? You're not really furthering the issue. If anything, you're solidifying their position by arguing with them.
Right, right. And that's what some of the comments that you get on your socials like piss me off sometimes. I go back into like I feel like the demon stirring inside and I want to like lash out with something horrible. Dude, like one time, all right, this little side note, but so when me and Sandy split up, we were both having some financial issues, you know, and we were getting calls from bill collectors. So I got a call from one and I was like, look, it was a woman. And I was like, look, I just, you know, was separated from my wife. Like I'm going to get all this straightened out. Just need a little bit of time to get my finances back in order. And she said to me, you know, cause bill collectors, they're nasty. They're supposed to be. And she said to me, maybe if you can handle your finances, your wife wouldn't have left you. So I was like, okay, you took it there. Not like my rule. I'm always going to take it a step farther. I started having phone sex with her. And she hung up very, very quickly. And it was a couple days later, I went over to pick up the kids and Sandy was bawling. She had just lost her mother like a couple of weeks prior. And she was on the phone, and I'm like, you know, I was asking her what was going on, and it was a bill collector, and she was trying to explain how she spent sending money in and stuff, but her mother just died. You know, she'll get to it. She forgot. And the guy was just being nasty. Yeah. So I was like, well, that worked with her. So let me see, you know, so I was like, let me have the phone. And I'm like, listen, why are you being like this? You know, I gave him a chance, and he was still being nasty. So I started describing to him what I was going to do to his mother. And he hung up. And the funny thing was, is that next day they called, somebody else called back and set up a payment plan with her. The payment plan was actually less money than she was sending. She was sending like $50 a month. They were like, just send us $10 a month. And I'm like, dude, that could have been handled so much easier. But yeah, so some of the comments that you get, I want to go back to that. You know, that's the urge I have, especially. Do you mind if I bring one up? So you had posted something, and the first comment somebody put, but why are you talking like that? You know, and they spelled out, you know, and you have naturally a more like, I don't know, what would you call it? Like a
voice or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, dude, when I smoke, I turn into like Jack Nicholson. I'm like, dude,
right.
Let's talk about consciousness, man. You know, like I go completely into another like voice personality. Yeah. But for those people that are just saying stuff to just say stuff to just be
mean,
they're punishment, their car, whatever you want to call it, karma, reward, you know, whatever, is they, if that's what they're putting out, imagine what they feel inside, you know. And it's hard to do because we take that stuff so personally. I mean, and because a lot of times it triggers our own insecurities about ourselves, you know. But like I was talking to a guy once when I worked at this program who was schizophrenic. We were talking about our internal versus external world. And he said, the sad thing is most people create an internal world that is so disgusting, nobody would want to live in it. Yeah. So that's why we have to try to control everything externally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I thought that was like, I was like, dude, that was one of the wisest things I think I've ever heard.
Yeah. I think your example of the bill collector was really good. And that was one of the things that I was sort of, I don't know if I'd use the word struggle, but contemplating and looking at, like I posted some kind of meme that said, like, everybody's having a hard time. You have no idea, like, be kind to the people who you interact with in your life. And somebody made a comment that's like, you know, something about like, I lost my job or somebody didn't give this to me. And so I'm not going to be mean to them or something. And I was like, well, you know, like you can be nice to the human and still hate the organization for their decisions or policies. But, you know, it's just, and they came back with a reason why they couldn't. And then I just left it because it's like, well, that's what I said. I took one step in. I told you my opinion if you don't want it. But it's interesting to me as I start to get more and more comments, I guess I'm questioning my responsibility. For example, you saw the one meme I posted where it has like Jesus and he says, love everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then somebody else says like, even if they're gay. And then somebody else says like, yes, even if they ask stupid questions. Right. It was just like a funny little meme. I thought it was funny. Right. But like the amount of, in my opinion, just like really horrible shit that people say and judgment. And then I think, well, like, I don't want any part of this. I want to delete it. Right. And it's like, okay, so if I post something and somebody misinterprets it or they say something mean on it, do I have a responsibility to hide their comment, delete their comment, respond to their like, where does my responsibility in this world end if I say something and somebody misinterprets me? Or I guess I'm just trying to feel this out on a bigger platform. Like as a person grows bigger and bigger in the world and their message and their impact is bigger, they have a larger responsibility. what does that really look like? Like, what are the nuances of that? Right?
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of.
Or do you just let it go? But that seems irresponsible in a way.
But so I guess my question would be is, what do we have a responsibility to or for? Do we have a responsibility for?
That's a good question, right? I have a responsibility for my clarity, but not for the other person's understanding.
Yeah, because in the social media world, even those nasty comments, and I still struggle. Like if I get one, like I start like, I'm like, oh man, I'm stupid, you know, because it triggers my issues, you know. But every comment, I saw a video once, this woman, she was, and she just looked like the most confident, strong person. And she was explaining why she loves getting these horrible comments. So she's like, because all you're doing is pushing my message out further and further. So every horrible comment I get, it's like upping like what the how far the algorithm. Yeah. And that means that my message is reaching more people that it does resonate with.
Right.
You know, it's getting there on the backs of assholes, but it's getting there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I think that our responsibility is to our purpose.
I don't know if that gives me a lot more clarity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess that would be a good thing for like a deep medicine dive for me, right? You know, because you're like, if you ask me like, what is my purpose? I would say to help people come home to themselves. But even if I know that, I still don't understand how that plays out in all these nuanced situations, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still, but it would be an interesting exploration for sure, like a deeper inner exploration.
Yeah, I remember watching a documentary on Jane Goodall, who I think she's just the most amazing woman. And she started going into pharmaceutical companies and touring where they kept the chimps. And then she would give a speech like afterwards, and she would show the chimps in the wild. And she would show them the behavior of the chimps in the cages and how, you know, how they were acting. And said, you're damaging. So she showed like the humanity of the chimps. She showed them their consciousness, and she was getting death threats. She was being called a traitor to the, you know, conservation type movement. And she said, if you want to change someone's mind, you have to first touch their heart.
Yeah.
And that's kind of become
internet. Yeah. Like I get that practice with a real person, but I'm not like that practice is really hard on social media, right?
Yeah, but each person that interacts with us, it is a person that is coming to us with their experiences, yeah, with their perspective, with the way they see the world. And a lot of them come as assholes.
Right. It's very spiky. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've gotten to the point where I can see them. I don't respond that way. Like I never respond immediately. If I get a good comment, like I just post something about UFOs,
right?
Yeah, I post something about UFOs and stuff, and this dude was like, "The Fermi paradox says," and I'm like, "I don't know, I don't care what you're saying, but I love you. You're awesome."
Totally.
Fermi paradox and stuff. So I made a video off of that, and then he brought me some even more information. Like there's this theoretical vehicle that can move through space and time, like, you know, so it'd be almost like interdimensional type travel instead of interstellar travel and stuff, and we're into that. So I'm responding immediately. Like my thumbs are just going like I'm like a 12-year-old, you know. But when I get the ones that are telling me I'm wrong, I have to hold back because, like, at first I'm like angry, I take it personal and stuff, but then after that little bit of time, I remember, like, that is a person that has had their experiences that has built who they are and how they see the world. Yeah. And sometimes I'm like, you know what, they got a point, you know. Mm-hmm. and other times I'm like, no, you're not right. And I'll make another video off that, like explaining where I'm coming from, but never outright saying you're wrong, you're stupid, you know, you don't know what the hell you're talking about or whatever. Because my message is like, love is one of the most powerful forces. I think the only thing that is more, I know like energetically, the vibrationally, the only thing that is a higher vibration than just love is authenticity. And I think authenticity is basically like a love of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, being comfortable enough to be yourself. And since that's my message, that's how I've decided I will always respond. Mm-hmm. So call me what you want, say what you want, whatever. That's a reflection of how you feel about yourself. But how I feel about myself is I feel love, I feel gratitude. So I'm going to come at you from where I am, not from where you are. And that's helped me out so much.
Yeah, where, I've had it. Oh, go ahead.
I would say, like, but I kind of went too far. So I had to start working a little bit more on being a little bit more assertive. Mm-hmm. And being like, don't placate, you know, right. Say like, no, I don't agree with you. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. That I think is a really deep truth. There's nothing wrong with just saying, I don't agree with you. Thanks for your opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I do a lot, especially with religious people, because if you're going to try to prove that you're right or wrong by like telling me Bible verses, and that's not my frame of absolute truth, we're in different universes, right? I can just thank you for your opinion and move on.
Yeah. There's so much stuff that I read. There was, Malcolm Gladwell wrote this book called The Bomber Mafia, about the, I think it was 100th bomber squadron from World War II. And there was this guy named Festinger who became a very prominent social psychologist who studied cults. And he studied this cult called the Seekers. And on a certain day at a certain time, the world was going to end. So all this woman who was a leader brought all their followers in, and a UFO was going to land in her backyard and pick them up so that they were saved from the apocalypse. And it was supposed to happen like at 4 o'clock. So he's like watching all this happen. 4 o'clock, she comes out of her room and she's like, I got a new message from the aliens. Like, there's traffic, you know, whatever. They're running a little bit behind. They're going to be here at midnight, not at 4 o'clock. So they're like, all right, great. So they're waiting. Midnight comes and goes, nothing. She comes back out of her little sanctum, whatever. And she's like, I got another message. They're coming on this date. And, you know, and that date comes and goes. And so, I got another message. They're coming on this date. And so what he found was that when we have a belief system, And to me, this is, again, one of the paradoxes that I'm falling in love with life, is that we have belief systems, but belief systems are a box that we're put in, you know, mm-hmm. that we believe from here to here. And I'm trying to expand that and just be a seeker, you know, to be able to accept new information without having a belief wall that it just comes up against. And he said, when we have a belief system and those beliefs are challenged, we don't question the beliefs, we double down on them.
Yeah.
And in the religious side, that's what I have found. You know, my background in Christianity, I mean, going to church from 5 years old, if not younger, up until like 43, reading my Bible constantly, you know, for a span, I read it through 3 times a year. I had it down 10 chapters a day, and I can get through in 3 months. And I did that religiously. And I feel closer to God on this side when I stepped away than I ever did when I was in there. And so this will be like one of the controversial things that'll really piss off a lot of people that hold that belief. And that's not the intention. This is just what I believe religion has turned into. But I believe religion has turned into like a thinly veiled humanism. It's a worship of self. Mm. It's all about pride. Like, I just saw a video. This lady's whole account is her on an airplane she was at a train station, on a bus, where she films herself yelling, "Can I have your attention? I want you to know that Jesus Christ died for your sin." I'm like, you're filming this? Like, this isn't for God. This is for you. This is pride.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that is sort of, they've taken the message of Jesus and they've turned it into a way to control. And again, it creates an us versus them.
Yes.
Which is so weird, because the very words of Jesus are yeah, I would that none die and go to hell. And you're like, oh, you don't think homosexuality is an abomination? You're going to hell. I can't wait to see you burn. All right, well, the guy that died for you and gave you salvation says that he doesn't want to see anybody die and go to hell, but you do, and you're on his wavelength, dude. No, you're not. Not at all. You know, like the judgment, the hatred, the fear, that is baked into that. And I feel very, very bad for them.
Yeah, I can actually remember, you know, because I was deeply religious too, church 4 times a week, that kind of thing. Oh, yeah. Someone would argue with me, I would just feel more and more self-righteous.
Yes.
And it was actually like a high, right? Like, I'm right and you're wrong, and I'm going to pity you, and someday you'll realize I'm right, even if that's like when you go to hell, and then you'll know I was right. Like, it's so separate and so, like you said, kind of arrogant or prideful, or like that position of like, God gave me the right to judge you.
Yeah.
Right. And that, yeah, it's almost impossible to come up against that, right? There's nothing you can do or say if somebody is in that place. And that is challenging.
And for the most part, not for, and because I know a lot of great Christians that I miss from my church days, you know, like thinking about needing community. I'm like, man, sometimes I wish I could go back and just sit down with these people and just talk, you know, and have a great conversation. But there's just a lot of the other ones that are there, you know? I mean, I was even told once in church, like, I don't like dressing up. I like being comfortable. So I own a suit, because I was in like my cousin's wedding, and that's the only reason why I own a suit, you know? And I had a guy telling me, it was a friend of mine. Well, it used to be a friend of mine, but how he dresses up for God, because God's worth it. And I was joking around. I was like, oh, I didn't know that God had the queer eye, you know, like for that, like the nice, you know, he did not like that one at all. And I'm like, well, I think God's more concerned with the outward appearance, or with the inward appearance, right, than the outward. So, you know, I'm cool in my jeans and my sweater. You know, I wasn't coming in as a bum, but I wasn't coming in the three-piece suit and everything, you know, so that God can look at me and be like, this dude knows fashion. All right. He's a good one, you know. But that's what it's been turned into. Yeah. And if you think or say anything against that my unbelief should not be a challenge to their belief.
Yes.
And when it becomes that, to me, it tells me that their belief is again, another Bible reference, is built on sinking sand. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something that is it's not the foundation. I mean, Jesus talked about, you know, building the church on the rock, you know, the foundation of everything. Well, rock is unmovable. And me saying like, no, I don't believe this is triggering you to the point where you're having like an aneurysm, like something's wrong.
I'm laughing because when you said that, like I grew up with Salty the Singing Songbook. Salty is right.
I haven't heard that in so long.
I was in all like the Salty plays. And there was a song I loved that was like, don't build your house on the sandy land.
Yeah.
I was like, Salty the Singing Songbook song in my head.
Dude, do you remember Father Abraham's song?
Oh yeah, totally. Like Father Abraham.
So my family, like we got a group text. And somebody put out, we're doing a Father's Day / my daughter Makari's birthday. So I think it was my dad or something that put like, oh, Father Makari. And then that just kicked that song off my head. So I typed in like the first line. I was like, Father Abraham had many sons and many sons had Father Abraham. And then my younger daughter, Ruth, just puts in right arm.
You know? Yeah, totally.
We just kept the whole thing going. Oh, man. Salty the Singing Songbook.
So funny. But before Salty came in my head, I was having another thought, and it's kind of what you said too, is that my platform, I say what I want to say, or in an argument, I say what I want to say. And then I allow the other person, it's their responsibility whether they want to pick it up or not pick it up or pick part of it up. But as soon as I engage in, I want to change your mind, that's when things get sticky. Even if that's on the comment thread, no matter where it is, I think that's the difference that I was really seeking in this investigation is, yeah, like it's okay for me to say everything I want to say and all my feelings. But as soon as I notice that feeling of like, I'm right, you're wrong, or I have to change your mind because and show you the error of your ways, then I'm in arrogance, right? And I'm not giving the other person, I'm not holding them as able to make their own mind based on just the information that I've provided. That's what I believe. Just recognizing that anytime I am starting to think I'm right and you're wrong and I have to correct you, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
Because that's when I'm no longer holding the other person as able to look at what I'm saying and make their own decision, right? I have an agenda for them.
That is so, I think that is like, out of everything, that right there is the piece for today.
Yes, I agree. That's what I was looking for, is like, what's the difference here? Like, I want to say what I want to say, but I don't want to get into this, I'm right, you're wrong, right? So I have to recognize it in me when it comes up.
Yeah. And that's where I came up with like that whole Scooby-Doo thing, like pulling the mask off, because then like you said, when I'm doing it for, that means I'm doing it for me.
Yes.
You know, but like going back to like the Jane Goodall, like if you want to change someone's mind, you got to touch their heart. And sometimes, so to me, that means leading with love. And sometimes that means accepting the fact that they don't agree. Like I had two people commenting, they used to comment constantly on my stuff. I don't believe they follow me anymore. But they were always telling me how I was wrong. You know, even one of them, when we had Diane on and she said, there is no destination to grieve. She came on, she's like, that's wrong. The destination is acceptance. So, and this happened like multiple times with this one person where I would then make a video off that. And I said, yes, we want to get to acceptance, but that grief never goes away. It may become less in time, but then there's going to be times like the whole analogy with the ocean where those waves are going to come in and just smash you. And it could be 10, 20 years down the road. And then she completely agrees with that. You know, so she's saying I'm wrong, but then she's agreeing with what I'm saying, you know. And there were so many times like I wanted to just, you know, my angry brain was like, you know, just put out something like, dude, if you're going to just willfully live a step above stupid, there's really nothing I could do, you know, but then that becomes about me.
Right.
You and know, then
you're in judgment, right. You're in arrogance. You're putting those things inside your heart.
I'm putting myself above her because like, oh, I'm smarter. I'm wiser, whatever it is, yeah. You know, but when I react with, I'm still going to be loving because I kind of feel bad. And we had talked about this once, like, cause the other person was a person that said like, for some people change is impossible. And I had responded to her and said, even if they want to change, even if they notice that change is needed and they want to work on change, said, nope, they can't do it. It's impossible. And everything that I'm learning about the brain, and granted, I'm learning it from my house, not from, you know, some big headed doctor, like, yeah, in school. But the neuroplasticity of the brain is amazing.
Yeah.
And so I truly believe change is able, you know, we're all able to change. And so when I try to get that across with as much love and understanding and kindness as I possibly can, with strength in there, because I think one of the things that has happened is kindness and empathy and all that stuff has been turned into weakness. You know, like this whole thing, like a nice guy, being a nice guy, being nice is a trauma response. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Why is being nice a trauma? Well, it's because you learned that you have to people please. No, like I can be nice. All right. So there was a lady. So I talk about this sometimes, like as a professional pool player, which I just play on Friday nights with a bunch of other people that, I mean, there's a lot of people that are good, but most of us suck. And I'm definitely in that category. But this lady was just having an off day and wasn't very talkative, kind of being a little mean, you know? And I just kept going at her with kindness, you know? So we have to compare the scores. And one time she like snapped at me and I'm like, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. You know, like joking around, like I'm a scared little kid. And then she stopped. My intent was her to laugh a little bit and she smiled, but she said, I lost my father this week. Mm. And I'm like, oh my God, dude. So I got up, I gave her a hug. She's now, every time I see her, like we talk, you know, I've played her a couple more times and we joke around. Like when I went up to play her, she's like, oh, hell no. Hell, you know, and then laughing about it and stuff. So we have now a good time. So you never know, like when we lead with the heart, to touch the heart instead of to change the logical brain, like that's where the magic happens.
Okay. I have a big question for you. So that is also my experience in one-on-one, small groups, 100%. That is my experience. On a huge level, is that possible? Right. Cause you look all throughout history and you see movements that were based in love and kindness and acceptance. And most of the time those people get assassinated. Most of the time we just kill those people if they start talking about love. But could the world on a mass scale become a better place, not fighting tyranny, but through love? I'm not using the right words, but do you understand what I'm saying? Like, can you upscale that? And does it really work at these large scales? Or do you have to stand up for injustice?
So I absolutely love that question because this is something that I've just recently said, like sort of solidified, like, nope, this is what I believe. I believe the answer is yes. However, I do not believe we are going to change anything by, and I got in trouble for saying this before, but I don't think anything's going to change by writing our congressmen or our senators. by doing the things that we kind of do to feel like we're doing something, but that doesn't really change anything.
Right.
For instance, like there's people like all the protests for Palestine and stuff. That's great. Great. But you know what would be, in my opinion, better? And I understand not everybody has the ability to do this, but go there.
Mm-hmm.
And work as a humanitarian, person. Like, put some action behind the thing. I think SNL did a thing like where people were going to a protest and they were stopping at a taco truck,
right.
And like before that, but people got to do what's right for them. But I think the fight is not out that way. I think the fight is this way. So I think that I can help be a change in the world, not by telling everybody what I think and what I believe and what I, what's right and what's wrong, but by making sure that I am the brightest light that I possibly can be, connecting with other people. Like, I mean, the way that we found each other,
yeah.
Which then like Fridays, when we came out, I was exhausted. I am like wide awake right now. I am so full of energy, dude, because that's what you do. Like, fire feeds itself, and that's how it'll change. So for me, my message of love, consciousness, being fucking nice to people because it's not a trauma response, not allowing ourselves to be walked on, or if you right. see someone else being treated horribly, not saying something. I mean, I'm like 48, and like the proudest moment of my 48th year was I got into a fight. It was at pool, and it was some other people, but I was trying to break it up, just separate people. But it was like, the fight or flight had taken over these guys, and they were like, I don't care if I get arrested and go to jail, I'll get out of jail and come to your house and kick your ass again. And I'm just like, dude, you guys think you're tough, but you're just little chihuahuas like shaking, but you think you're tough. And then this one dude grabbed a girl's wrist. And when I heard that, I was like, we're done. Yeah. And I take karate online. So my online sensei, I'm joking. That's from The Office. Remember? Online sensei. But just from watching years and years at WWE, like, I hip tossed the dude and put him on the ground. And then I was on top of him. And then I was like, we're done. I wasn't angry. I wasn't mad. I was like, we're done. And that stopped the altercation. Now, right. Unfortunately, the next day, I couldn't move. My right side of my body hurt so bad.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, I'm too old for this stuff, but. So it's having that level of standing up.
Yeah, there is a point of action where you stand up for injustice. But then when the threat is gone, you back down. You don't keep pursuing that person, right? Or that group of yeah. people, whatever it is that's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no need. Sadhguru, in one of his books, wrote this story about the Buddha when he was one of his past incarnations, he was a bear. And so the hunter was digging a hole, a trap, and he fell in it, got stuck. And this bear comes along, and the hunter's like, can you help, get me out of here? I'm going to die in here. So the bear starts rolling all these massive boulders into the hole, and the guy is able to climb out. And the guy said, I'm lost. Can you lead me out of the woods? And the Buddha bear was like, yeah, but I'm tired from moving all these boulders. Let me sleep for a minute, and then I'll bring you out. So while the bear was sleeping, the hunter decided, I can find my way out eventually with nothing, or have this bear lead me out and I'll have nothing, or I can find my way out, kill the bear, and have the pelt. So he picked up the biggest rock that he could lift. And while the Buddha bear was sleeping, he smashed it on his head. And the Buddha bear woke up, got up on back paws, you know, like standing like 10 feet tall. And the guy was like, don't kill me, don't kill me, don't kill me. And the bear just looked at him and he said, you already got your punishment, man. Mm-hmm. And he just turned around and walked into the woods and left the guy there. You know, and the punishment was the guy to do that, like to act in that way, to try to take the bear's life when he wasn't looking, almost like a sucker punch type thing. Internally, that guy's miserable. You know, I truly believe that we will not change the world because the powers that be are too, the hold is too strong, that we will not change the world by external means.
Yeah.
But we can change the world by changing our internal state and connecting that with more people.
Yeah. What I thought of when you said that was you were talking about shining bright earlier. And it's almost like if I shine at my brightest, that's when all the darkness becomes more apparent around me. Because that's what the bear did, right? When I shine it, when I am myself, you have to sit with yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's powerful. Yeah, I was, you know, talking online with some folks about, you know, world peace and how to change the world and stuff. And someone said, kind of similar to what you said, right? Like, you can build islands of peace, love, compassion. And then the hope is eventually those islands get bigger and then maybe they connect and then, right. But that's growing it from inside out versus trying to dismantle this system that is so broken, that has such a strong hold on the way things are right now.
Have you ever heard of, I don't know what it's called. I call it the 1% rule. Don't take any of this as like fact. This is all going to be like, you know, paraphrased from my memory. But I believe what they were trying to do is scientists are trying to cool helium down to absolute zero. Like zero Kelvin, I guess, like they would use. And while they were doing it, when it got to 1% above that absolute zero, something magical happened. All of the atoms in that helium became like symmetrical. They all lined up beautifully, you know, like in neat rows and in columns, like everything was just perfectly in line. And that's how they became, like the discovery of superfluids came around. I believe, I hope I'm not butchering it too much, but then like the consciousness people took that and started looking at, if we can raise the consciousness of 1% of the people of an area, what would that do? Mm-hmm. And they had done some studies, and I forget the cities they did it in, but you know, where they had people that, you know, would join them and getting like a 1% of the population of the city to start meditating, focusing on gratitude, focusing on love, focusing on just positive things, you know. And again, not living, walking around with our heads in the clouds, woo woo, you know, if something bad happens, yeah, that sucks, you know, but living the majority of our lives in those positive states. And what they found was crime went down. There was so many beneficial responses.
Yeah.
To 1% of the population of a city not doing anything except raising their level of consciousness.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know there's been tons of experiments with, you know, the random number generators and different types of things like that where consciousness can change that. I also really love the idea of, and this is sort of like a nerdy D&D sort of way of thinking, that there's different roles. Like, it's good that there is warriors out there like fighting in Congress and trying to change laws and this and that. But the fact that I'm not a warrior doesn't make me less than, right? That my role as, you know, being home and focusing on my own consciousness, or being back at camp making people food, or being, right, that we all have roles to play, and they're all equal, needed, necessary roles, right? I think that's another valuable thing, because I know, you know, I have such a huge heart for humanity and humans, and I so want to see the world a more compassionate place. But I am not a warrior, right? And sometimes I think I get confused about how to own my own warriorship in the ways that are true to me. Like, what does authentic warriorship look like for Mindy?
Yeah. Even that word, I got to the point like where I got so tired of hearing the word warrior, because it was one of those words like they romanticized war.
Yeah.
And then romanticized the warrior. You know, so we all these movies that we see, you know, books, like,
yeah, it's hugely romanticized. Yeah.
And it's a lot different from watching a war movie.
Well, you've been in it, so you know, like,
yeah, I Lone Survivor, you know, like when I watched that movie, like I feel those stirrings again, like, oh man, I loved doing that, you know, and I was never in anything like that, you know, but in those moments, those guys were operating off of pure fear and terror. And I'm not saying, like, again, we think of those things as like, oh, you're weak, you're afraid. No, that's what the military does. That's the training that happens. They train it into your automatic responses so that you can be feeling that stuff, compartmentalize it, and still get the job done. But throwing yourself off mountains and getting shot 20 times and making it through, yeah, that's great. But it's going to leave scars. It's not just going to be a thing of like, you know, once it's done, like, yeah, that was pretty cool. You know, I'm a warrior, you know, and then now you have courses for warriors, you know, so if like you're a businessman, you know, that the only time you step on grass or you're out in the woods is like when you go to Central Park or something, you know, for your daily walk. But you can give me 50 grand and I'll yell and scream at you for a week. And then on Saturday, you'll jump out of a helicopter 10 feet above a lake and we're going to call you warriors now.
Yeah.
You know, even the fact like
Lao Tzu.
Not Lao Tzu. Who wrote, The Art of War? Is that Lao Tzu, right? Yeah. Yeah. So The Art of War, like one of the first copies I got of it was all the notes were about how to apply this to business. I'm like, why can't business just be business?
Yeah.
And like, why do we have to be a warrior in everything that we do? You know, so that part, and I'm grateful for the people that have that ability to be on those front lines and to be in that, but I wasn't that dude. You know, right. I did my time, I got out because like I was not that dude. But what that does is it makes us look at our roles as less than glorified warrior status.
Yeah. And it also shows how that might have contributed to people's sort of fight nature in our culture, right?
Yeah.
To feel like, I'm a warrior for my opinion, right? That sort of, yeah, I think that is something I'm going to take a deeper look at. Like, what do I really think about that concept of being a warrior? Is it necessary in the world? What does it really mean? Who do you have to be that, right? I think that's an interesting exploration.
Yeah, so I decided a while ago, like, you know, people that want to be a warrior, great, be a warrior. I'm fucking cosmic, dude.
Yeah.
Like I want to be so far above. And again, not because like I'm so great, but because that's where I find my peace. One of the things with the military is when you come home, no matter what your experiences are, war, you know, peacetime, whatever it is, or even like mine, where it's kind of like in between war and peacetime, you know, and you don't feel like you belong. You know, the jokes, the how you carry yourself is not accepted as normal and right in the civilian world. So you're a civilian But you still have the military culture. So what you learn to do is put a mask on, and over time that mask begins to crack and you start filling it with alcohol, with drugs, and all this stuff that just makes it worse and worse and worse and worse because you can't be you.
Yeah.
And when I think of I am cosmic, like I'm just above that, floating, it feels so peaceful. And I get there from time to time, but I want to learn how to live in that state. And I don't know, maybe that's impossible to do.
Yeah.
But that's where I want to live.
Yeah, I kind of think it's, I don't know if this is right or not. This is just the way I'm seeing it today. Like, you know, we all have all these parts of us, right? And living just in one part is unhealthy. And that's what we're talking about with warrior. I'm just a warrior, right? I'm just a mom. I'm just a this. I'm just a that. Like, instead of having all the voices, oh, here's my inner child. Here's my inner warrior. Here's my inner whatever it is. But then I think you're right. There's something above that when it's just consciousness and you're like, huh, all those things are the same thing. That's so funny that they're pretending to be different, right? And you're everything. And that's sort of what you're talking. But so it makes me curious in two ways. One is like, ooh, that's actually unhealthy, like this full identity with warriorship. And that's what you're describing when you like come back and you don't have any other parts of your personality developed, so you can't fit into the world. But then, yeah, even after you learn to see all the different parts of you, then there's still this other juicy, wonderful step of just, you know, being with the stars, being everything and nothing all at the same time.
Yeah, because that's when my brain goes into this place of where, okay, so there is no center of the universe. The center of the universe is based off of the point of observation, which means I am nothing. I'm just this dude in Newington, Connecticut that smokes weed and talks to my phone. You know what I mean? But I'm also the center of the universe. I'm the most important thing
Right.
here. At the same time. You
Yes.
know, and it's in the same way for you. You know,
Yeah.
like we're nothing and everything at the same. You are the center of the universe. So you like if you decide like, all right, my purpose is like, all right, or what I'm gonna start doing is like to act on my compassion, my care. I'm gonna start working at a soup kitchen, you know, on the weekends, volunteering, stuff like that. Then that means since you are the observer of the universe, which means you are the center of it, that means to the universe, that is the most important action that has ever been taken. But then for somebody else that is the warrior, like a legit freaking warrior,
Right.
since they're the center of the universe at the same time, what they're doing is the most important thing, you
Yeah.
know? But imagine if we can learn to live where our consciousness takes these other characters of our personality and kind of uses them as like a marionette, you know what I mean? Just kind of controls the strings and stuff, but it's the consciousness that's in control and not the character.
Yes. Yeah. That's, I think, a beautiful description of quote unquote enlightenment, right? Like recognizing that this is all a play and it's not really real.
Yeah. Dude, one of the things, oh man, Neil deGrasse Tyson was talking about this. Like, we have never interacted with the outside world.
Meaning, like, what does that mean?
Means that everything that we've ever done in life has always been internal, right? So I'm looking at this screen and
Oh,
seeing you,
right.
but my eyes are just seeing colors and shapes stuff, and my brain is decoding that and making this reality. Your voice is sending out sound waves. You know, that my ears are bringing to my brain's decoding. And I'm like, I understand that. Like, if you were speaking Spanish, any other language but English, I would have no freaking clue what you were saying. You
Yeah.
know, my brain isn't coded for that. And then, like, all right, here's, I'm holding this pen. I can feel it. I can feel its weight and stuff. But if you look, if we had an atomic microscope and we looked at the space in between my pen and the finger, the pen would be floating. Because the atoms in the pen are repelled by the atoms in my finger. They're different polarity. So all of that feeling is the electromagnetic force that's pushing in on my finger. We've never interacted with the outside world. Everything is internal.
Yeah.
That's where the fight is. that's where the change can happen. To go in.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Really well said. That was a really great hour. I think that was a juicy conversation.
I think this is like one of my favorite ones because I love this stuff. Like I want to learn how to live in that higher state so bad because I'll have this conversation and in 20 minutes I'll stub my toe and I'll be like, my life sucks. Why am I like, you know, and it'll be like, I'll be right back into the cycle of fucking feelings, man.
Yep. Yeah. So bizarre, huh?
Right. So yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Being a human is just so cool.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for the investigation today. Thank you, Keith, for the investigation. That was helpful to me in managing everything that I'm going through in my life right now.
And dude, the most beautiful thing is like the synchronicities, because I was down yesterday, you know, bad. And this is such a reminder of all the stuff that I fell in love with, you know, that helped me begin to make the changes I had to make in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So thanks for bringing that up.
Wow. All right, cool. Well, we'll see all you guys next week. And hold on a second. Sorry, I'm doing the wrong buttons here, guys. Bye, guys. Stop recording.
Thank you for listening to the Chasing Thoughts podcast. Please support us by liking, subscribing, or leaving a review or comment. We would really appreciate it. If you'd like to be a guest, we would love to explore life and what it means to be human with you. Please email us at chasingthoughtspodcast@gmail.com.